Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. Before we get to my guest, December 13th and 14th, I'm going to be in Cincinnati at Go Bananas Comedy Club. I hope you can come out if you're in the area. Go Bananas, Cincinnati. Great club. Been there a long time. Have a great time. It's December 13th and 14th. You can go online to get tickets. Hope you had a nice Thanksgiving. It's Monday, and I am still lying on the couch. That's how much I ate. I think I got bed sores. But I had a good weekend. I hope you did too. And my guest this week is Susan Kelechi Watson, who is a great, great actress from This Is Us and Divorce, and is in the new Fred Rogers movie with Tom Hanks, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. So a really cool conversation with her. Enjoy it. And go work off that turkey dinner. My guest this week stars as Beth Pearson in This Is Us. She's appeared in NBC's The Blacklist, HBO's Divorce, and is one of the stars of the new film about Mr. Rogers, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, where she plays Andrea Vogel, the wife of a journalist, writing a feature piece on Tom Hanks' character, Mr. Rogers. It's Susan Kelechi Watson. Great to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you. I love being here. Thanks.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I really didn't even know this movie was in production until I started seeing the advertisements for it, and it's such a great concept. You know, at the core of it is this relationship between Hanks's character Fred Rogers and your husband, the reporter who's writing a piece on him. And as we all know, sort of Mr. Rogers is known for sort of having taken the time to listen and understand and sort of connect with children, not so much teenagers. It was that I, you know, as more children. But how do you think? Obviously, you had to be immersed in the world of Fred Rogers, I would imagine, to prepare for this. How do you think Fred Rogers knew that children needed what he was giving them?
You know, in watching the documentary, it felt like when he saw what television was doing, children's programming in television, he felt that it needed to be something more substantial than just, for example, a clown throwing, you know, having pies thrown in their face and, you know, a simplistic kind of humor. He felt like television, I think, was his impetus. It felt like an opportunity for children to have programming that actually spoke to them about things that matter to them and that they might not understand how to deal with. He figured that, you know, whatever was going on in the world, children are, it's somehow being filtered to children. And he wanted to make sure that there was a space where they understood what things like divorce meant, or things like war or fighting or anger or sadness. And there was a place where they could really tackle those feelings and those issues, and he just felt like TV was such a great opportunity for that. And he was also not only a minister, but he was like a child psychologist, I believe. He studied child psychology and wanted to make an impact in that area, and sort of like happened into the Mr. Rogers format. You know, I think he had originally started out with a different kind of format. I can't remember the name of the show. And then something happened and the show kind of went wonky on the air. And I think at that time, it's not, you can get something like a commercial into cover or something. But what he did was pull out his puppet, Daniel Striped Tiger, and start using the puppet to kind of cover airtime. And then, you know, I mean, that was sort of the beginning of what began to form, you know, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Yeah, the character you're playing, Andrea Vogel, you and your husband, the reporter, that your new parents, and there's some strains in your relationship. And how in preparing for your role, how important was it for you to understand the real Fred Rogers? Obviously, you had to understand what your husband was going through in his character, but how important was it for you to understand Fred Rogers in that world and what he was trying to do? Or was that not as relevant for what you had to do with your character?
You know, Andrea's a fan of Mr. Rogers, so I think it was pretty relevant for her to have her own, you know, relationship to the, you know, the image of who Mr. Rogers is. And fortunately, I had that because I grew up watching Mr. Rogers. So that was pretty easy for me to, you know, to put into the character.
Yeah. And how, as the course of the movie goes on, like, how does Fred Rogers sort of, you know, come in and sort of, I think you said Mr. Rogers, this is a quote of yours, comes in and shines a light on each other's needs, you and your husband, and shows them how to be sensitive toward one another. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds really good. Oh, yeah. Really good. That sounds, makes sense out here in East Street.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. So what's the question?
You're very eloquent. I got to tell you, I'll give you the whole thing. I think they're both looking for each other's support and understanding in this new chapter of their lives. Mr. Rogers comes and shines a light on each other's needs and shows them how to be sensitive toward one another. Because your husband in the movie goes in rather cynical, kind of thinking, this guy, Mr. Rogers, there's something not right here. This guy's too good to be true, kind of thing, right? So he's got a cynicism that has to get stripped away in some way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, he's used to that, you know. He's used to finding that in people and finding, you know, what's the kink in the chain, or like what part of them are they hiding, you know?
Yeah.
They can't be this nice, or they can't be this good, or they can't be everything that they're saying that they are. Like, nobody is. And that's sort of the cynicism he's walking into that relationship with. And then Mr. Rogers just proves to be a person of his word. And his wife takes discipline. I mean, one of the things we keep emphasizing, because his wife emphasized it, was that he's not a saint and shouldn't be seen as one, because then it makes his life unattainable. But he was somebody who worked at it daily, and who had a discipline and a structure to his life that really kept him on a certain track. I mean, even up to his weight, I think his weight was like 143.
Yeah.
For like most of his adult life.
Yeah, I saw that in the documentary.
The weight.
Yeah, I saw that in the documentary.
Yeah,
it was crazy. Yeah. Yeah.
He was up, right? The word. Yeah. And, you know, it was a discipline. I feel like there's this side of Mr. Rogers that, you know, we think, oh, he's just this nice, kind man. But there's work that goes into that. You know, there's work that goes into really believing a certain way and living it out.
Mm.
Because anybody can go off track, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the great thing about Mr. Rogers was he was disciplined. But, you know, you meet disciplined people in your life and they come off really disciplined and rigid. But he didn't, because I think if he did, it would have been difficult for him to get people to open up to him and for him to kind of get past people's outer protection. So there was this interesting, and it's almost like it's really interesting to see how Lloyd's character, your husband, needs something that Mr. Rogers knows he needs, but he doesn't know he needs it yet, right? And then that sort of, that seems to filter over into you and your relationship with him as his wife, as you guys are going through this sort of, you know, difficult part of your life, if you will, with a new baby and all. It's really amazing, sort of his insight. And, you know, it's interesting, the director said that he wanted to make your relationship with your husband feel like a couple who'd been together for years, like they really know each other, that their arguments feel real. Was that sort of the way you were approaching it going in? And then were you approaching it a different way? And then once you started working, I don't know if you guys rehearsed ahead of time, but how much work was involved in developing your character with the director beforehand or during the tape, during the filming?
Marielle Heller, we call her Mari, was, you know, really great about giving us rehearsal time before. I remember arriving a couple of days before we started shooting, and she set up time for Matthew and I to rehearse and wanted, you know, just around the table, just wanted us to, you know, connect with one another. And she was very much about things feeling very real and stripped down, and like you were really just kind of in someone's living room or someone's kitchen, and you know, everything was, you know, it was the 90s, and you know, so it was very, you wanted to feel the authenticity of the time and the place and the argument, and it just wanted to feel like a real relationship. She wanted me to feel like someone who just had a baby, so you know, maybe I don't care so much about my hair and you know, makeup and you know, clothing. Everything wanted to feel like someone who's adjusting to this new period in their life. I think it was one of the main focuses and vision in terms of how we wanted to portray, you know, their marital relationship, that sense of reality.
Mm. Yeah, I was actually surprised to see that this was shot on location in Pittsburgh, which is basically where Fred lived and worked and raised his family. And was that helpful, or is that important for you in sort of, you know, playing the role? And what kind of impact do you think that had, like, on the film and the genuineness of the film overall?
You know, it's always great to be in the actual city.
Yeah.
Then you get the vibes, you know what I mean? You understand what it was like. And also, people have so much love for Fred Rogers in Pittsburgh. I mean, Pittsburgh, they really support their own there, you know? As you can see, you know, as Steelers fans, and, you know, they're very organized in terms of, like, their support of, you know, their fellow Pittsburghians. I don't know what you would call it.
But, yeah, I don't know either.
But they're really supportive in that way. And and us having the opportunity to shoot on WQED, you know, to actually be on the same soundstage that Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood was on. So I was literally in the same room that Mr. Rogers was in, and on a set that was, you know, to the letter, the exact replica of his set. And people from the show being there, you know, and to help with the authenticity and just all of these things. I mean, it was really using the same cameras that he used on set. I mean, it's just...
Really? They that level of detail, huh?
That much of detail.
Wow.
The sweater he wore, they found out it was a knit sweater. Somebody knitted it, that red sweater. And they had somebody knit the red sweater that Tom Hanks wore, and you know, in a similar style. Everything was about attention to every last bit of detail.
Yeah, I saw that his wife gave Tom some of Fred's actual ties to wear. Also, it's pretty incredible.
Yes. We had her. We had people who worked on the show with him for the duration of the show. Some of them came to the opening night, and I met them. There was a great sense of not only what we were doing, the new thing we were doing, but this real sense of nostalgia and bringing back. You know, the old, yeah.
There's something that you do that I thought was really cool, and I've heard about this. I don't know if you're still involved, but you serve on the board of the Drama Club, which is an organization that uses theater to mentor incarcerated youths in New York City. Are you still part of that? That just sounds like a great program.
Yeah, absolutely. Drama Club does just that. It goes into Rikers Island, juvenile detention centers, you know, homes for at-risk youth, and we teach them improv, we provide mentorship, we provide jobs for those who come out. We you know, would have them to intern with us, and you know, eventually we want to create a program where the people who have used Drama Club are the ones who run Drama Club. It's a program that's very near and dear to my heart, and we are actually just starting our end of year fundraising now, and I'm still on the board. And it's always about, you know, providing for, you know, our youth, and you know, everything that we do and all the funds that we get goes right back into the program to do that and to get as much help as we can. You know, there are a lot of kids who are at risk. There are a lot of kids who are part of, you know, the disenfranchised group in this country and are profiled, and there's so many different stories to why people end up where they are, and you know, without any judgment or even knowing why they're in that space, we come to them and we begin to, you know, explore their humanity and what they know about you know, their own humanity through art. We do that through art. And it really starts to break down walls with them. And even with, you know, their fellow, either who they're incarcerated with or the people that they're in juvenile detention centers with, it begins to break down those walls, and these big, huge bonds are formed with these young people. It's incredible to see, them in the fullness of themselves. It's an incredible thing to watch. I never stop being amazed by it. So
yeah. Do you think the bonds get formed in that? Is there a common, I know you said there's lots of different reasons. Each child is different why they are where they are. Is it because they lack mentorship? They don't have parents around, or they've been given up for adoption, whatever, or foster children, whatever it might be, but they suddenly through this program find an adult that truly cares and wants to take care of them. And that's why those bonds get formed.
I think, you know, some of them have families. Some mm-hmm. of them are wrongfully accused. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of them, have committed whatever crime it is that has been committed. Some of them have mentorship or lack mentorship. The thing that I've learned is that you can't put them in a box. Right. There are all these different reasons, and there's all these different ways. And Drama Club is really great about, you know, kind of knocking down those stereotypes of why somebody is there.
Mm-hmm.
But what we do is say, regardless of why you're here, you know, this doesn't have to be the period at the end of your story. Like, this can be a comma. Like, you know, your story can go on from here.
Mm-hmm.
This moment doesn't have to define you. What we can do is use it to propel you into the next place, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think young people really appreciate when people care, when they just genuinely care.
Yeah.
And we're not trying to get anything from you. It's not for, you know,
right.
us, but we get blessed by it. But it's for you, and the fact that we see that there is wrong and there's injustice in the world, and we want to do something about it. And they appreciate, you know, that there's people who genuinely care.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a real connection between the role you're playing in the film you're in and Mr. Rogers in that world and what he was about and what this program is about. I would imagine if you look at it from a 30,000 foot perspective, it's sort of like one's feeding the other in a way. Maybe you were destined to play the part because of what you do in the drama club or vice versa, but it sounds like you guys are doing some really special stuff. So the movie is A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. It's really a great film, and congratulations on all of your success. You've been an amazing stuff, and it's really great to have you on and talk about the film, and wish you the best of luck in the next project you're doing.
Thank you so much. It was really so great talking to you.
Okay, great. Have a great day. Thanks for being on. That's Susan Kelechi Watson, everybody. All right, there you go.
I really enjoyed her. She was really interesting. So December 13th and 14th, you can see me at the Go Bananas Comedy Club in Cincinnati, Ohio. Go online to get tickets. That's December 13th and 14th. Hope you can make it out, and hope you guys have a great week, and we'll see you next week.